And I'm going to turn you now to Tom Merkle to officially start our meeting. Tom?
Thank you, Ravaging. First, welcome everyone to the DEMA-SIG panel discussion. And we're pleased to have Mrs. Sarah Haida, the FEMA DM program manager, with us for our meeting. Sarah, I now turn the floor over to you.
Thank you, Tom. I don't have a lot to say, and I want to keep it brief because I think we're going to get some really great discussion from today's speakers. I'm really excited to hear what they have to say. This is getting underway, our assessment of the system, where we want to take it in the future. I think in previous calls I mentioned that we were going to be doing a full-blown assessment. We're still ramping that up, but we thought we'd jump the gun on it and start getting those big questions out there and making sure we're following the right path as we move forward with this assessment. Some updates. I think we had finished the migration of the system for the last call, and everything's running well there. In fact, on our open SIG form call, we were told that users had seen an increase in performance of about 300%, so we were very excited to hear that. I haven't heard of any lingering issues with the migration. Everyone who needed to be redirected was redirected, and things seem to be working well there. Otherwise, like I said, this is starting to do that assessment. We'll be asking a lot more questions of you as we move forward, collecting more data and looking at the best enhancements or future for DEMAS and OPEN. So with that, I will turn this back to Tom.
Thank you very much, Sarah. That was a very good insight. Now we'll go back to Avagene to start the discussion.
Yes. Thank you, Tom. Remind you one more time, we are recording, so try to keep things quiet in the background if you can, and please mute your phone. Do not put us on hold. We're very pleased to have a panel of DEMA-SIG members with us today. Each one has been given a question that's related to DEMAS, and I will briefly introduce each speaker and state the question that was given out ahead of time. Speaker will be given 5 minutes to reply to their respective question, then we will move on to the next speaker. I will interject a one-minute warning to keep us on time. And we would ask you, as members of our audience, to jot down any comments, questions, or if you need a point of clarification, please write it down as you hear the discussion. And then after we hear from all our speakers, we're going to provide you time for your questions and comments. Now to our first speaker. We all know John Stoddard as the DEMA-SIG Steering Committee Chair. John is also the head of his own company, CompSource, which develops computer applications for hazardous waste managing, tracking, and emergency management. John is very familiar with state and local jurisdictions. John, your question is, what are the obstacles to fully implementing DEMA's tools for response organizations?
Okay. Thank you. I prefer not to use the word obstacles. I like to use the word challenges when we're talking about the DEMAS tools because they're not really obstacles. And a lot of the, if you consider them obstacles, they can be prevented with advanced planning. And when I look at implementing the DEMAS tools, I look at it at two levels. One is the installation of the software tools itself. And then in order to be fully implemented, you have to look at the post-installation. With today's technology, we've had a challenge that's been presented to a lot of the emergency management agencies and first responders, and that's a thing called plug and play. And we're so used to buying software tools for a computer off the shelf and plugging them in to our computer, and after a few minutes the software tools are up and running. DEMAS is a little bit more challenging than your typical plug and play. DEMAS comes with a set of install instructions. One of the problems that or challenges that's presented with it is that DEMAS can run on a number of platforms, a number of operating systems. In other words, Windows 98, Windows 2000, Windows XP, and I'm not sure if it runs on Vista yet or not. The challenge comes when you start looking at the system requirements and you go through the checklist of the installation requirements of the DEMAS software. And one of the challenges will first be terminology, things like proxy servers. You need to really look into the documentation well before you start putting in the install software and become familiar with the terminology. The next challenge is going to be where the documentation gives you windows or gives you illustrations of the windows that are going to be popping up as you do the install. The problem or the challenge there is that every operating system is going to have different types of windows and different formats of windows coming up. The documentation initially represents, I would say, Windows 98 and Windows 2000, but most organizations are now at Windows XP. The windows that are in the documentation are not going to be exactly the same as they would be in the documentation. So you're going to have some help with some friends, or one of the better ways is, as you do your install, is to have the number for the DEMAS help desk available. And one of the things we can do is we can send the DEMAS help desk number out to people. They're available Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and I think that's Eastern Standard Time, and they may be able to send you the windows that apply or the illustrations that would apply to your operating system. Now, one of the most important things is for DEMAS to work, you're going to need what's called a COG ID, and you're going to you have to register for the COG ID, and it can take you anywhere from a day to a week to get that, depending on the workload. And so that would be the most important tool. The second thing would be, and once you have it up and running, DEMAS comes with the documentation a subset, which is called the Quick Reference Manuals. And I would highly recommend that anybody that's going to do the, once you have it installed, get a hold of the Quick Reference Manuals rather than trying to read the regular manuals. The Quick References gives you a picture storybook means of how to install the system, how to set it up, and how to use it. And one of the obstacles that you're going to be running into or challenges is use it or lose it. If you don't use the system on a regular basis, it's very easy to forget how to use the system. And if you're going to use the Technical Information Exchange, which is a fancy name for the geo mapping, it's very complex, and you need to really be prepared to spend a lot of time and frustrations in trying to do the geo mapping.
1 minute, John.
Okay. The regular alert messaging software installation should be rather simple and straightforward as long as you use the quick reference manuals. Any questions?
We'll take those afterwards, John.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Walter Atherton. Walter is a retired military man and currently serves as Deputy Director of Daviess County, Kentucky, EMA. He's been there since 1994. He operates the Emergency Management Agency Warning Point that is very proactive in weather monitoring and warning. Walter was involved with the National Weather Service HazCollect and DEMAS Tool Operational Acceptance Testing, and his question is related to that involvement. Walter, what impact do you expect the deployment of HazCollect to have on DEMAS usage?
I could make this very short. I think it'll have a great impact on it. You said I was asked to look into HazCollect. I guess it's been close to 3 years ago. And I have to agree with several things that John said, the plug and play, the use it or lose it. When I started coming in cold, I did not find DEMAS or HazCollect very user-friendly. I had to work it out, dig it out from about 700 pages of manuals of documentation. John suggested the quick guide. I certainly totally agree with that. But after I got into it and began to understand it, I like it. I like it very much, and I think it is a very valuable combination of tools. Our office has spent over $75,000 in the last few years on crisis management software, and we have absolutely nothing to show for it except some bookwork on the manuals. I've worked with several programs, the ones that we have bought as well as some of the others. I think a very key thing here, which I'm sure there would be no disagreement with, none of the commercial programs have or offer. Now, EscoLect is free, and it hadn't been promoted, and I'm afraid a lot of people look at it as just some more garbage out there on the Internet. We've all got being pushed to do more things than we can possibly do. Because it had been promoted. If Demas had been a commercial product, I think it would have been in use all over the country by now, and I would really like to have been a salesman for the company selling it. I think it would have been a great product to sell. Powerful tool for the emergency manager, and EscoLect will going to be successful. I think there's a few things that got to market it. That has not been done. Local weather service offices, I think, will be the key with EscoLect combined. Promote it to their local emergency managers to demonstrate it at their workshops can do a tremendous amount to get the word out across the country. I like the idea very much of bundling Demas with a commercial product such as EM Ready. We've been working with John for, a couple of years, I guess, to implement EM Ready. These are definitely two distinct tools. It would be nice to see them together, help us take it a daily. We need to use these things every day, not put it on the shelf and expect when we need it that it's going to be there and going to happen. Demas needs to be sold to the state emergency management, homeland security offices, so these people are promoting it. And I was looking this morning at Health Homeland Security, the pandemic influenza plan, supplement 10, public health communications. I ever saw a natural. Demas and EscoLect is it. We also would like to show it at we have a state conference of emergency managers and EMAAPCO, they call it emergency management, and APCO 911. Show as a vendor, or at least a presentation there, I think would be a... We do believe in putting our money where our mouth is, which we've offered to host EMS EscoLect Workshop, a area for the region, emergency managers, and public health, public safety agencies, that we're going to have to get the word out and show what's there if we make it work. But EscoLect, I think, can be the single key tool that emergency managers are interested to take a look at.
Okay. Thank you, Walter. I appreciate your insight. Now on to Rick Skinner. Rick is a GIS specialist within the medical EMS field. He gained experience with Demas CAP alerting tool and interoperability with CAP alerts as a volunteer participant for the DM program in CWID 2007. Currently, the regional EM program he is working with plans to use Demas. Rick shared the project concept with the SIG last month, and his whole idea seems to be moving forward to the point that they may be funded outside the state's grant program, so we're very happy to hear about that. Rick, your question is, the current COG structure is not geographically or jurisdictionally referenced. Do we need a logical structure for a hierarchy of COGs, for example, city, county, state, subregion, or other schema?
Thanks, Avajin, for inviting me on the panel. When you take a look at the configuration tool and you scroll through that list of COGs that have been set up, there's quite a variety of types of COGs. I've been going through it, and I've come up with things like there are federal agencies, there's state government, municipal governments and departments, military. There's regional organizations, private sector, transportation, utilities, humanitarian services. and the list goes on. And it would seem that it would be very advantageous not only to the DEMAS administrators to keep track of things, but also for the users that want to see what other cogs are available that they may need to connect to, depending on the type of disaster and interoperability that they're interested in supporting. And I'm thinking of several different ways of accomplishing that. One might be to base a structure on the role that a cog might have in a disaster. For example, primary response, voluntary services, the recovery aspect, private sector. Another way of possibly organizing or categorizing the cog setup would be through, you know, following the critical infrastructure key resources schema. And I think another thing that would be helpful would be when somebody is signing up for a cog that they're able to identify the type of registration, whether it be a test. There's a number of cogs in here that appear to be test cogs. In other words, they're not formally implemented. They may be being looked at as from a research perspective. And a formal implementation. Somebody who says, yeah, I want to set up a cog, and this is how I'm going to use it for these organizations or these agencies. And I think, I don't have the answer to how it should be set up. I'm just throwing some ideas out, but I think something different than what we currently have. And we might want to look at horizontal, vertical, and diagonal structuring. And by that I mean horizontal might be various police departments within a region, cross municipal boundaries. The vertical obviously would be, say, municipal state or a regional health district connected with interoperable with a state health agency. And the diagonal would be associations, organizations that are kind of amorphous and they don't really have a geographic relevance. For example, Red Cross. That organization, humanitarian services, disaster relief, fits in whether it's a local disaster or regional or state level. So they kind of have a potential for being involved in a lot of different levels geographically. Other than that, I think that's how I would, characterize that question. That I think putting everything in one list is confusing, hard to manage, and it's hard for the practitioner to access and decide who are the key cogs that they might want to involve in their event.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. That's very good and thorough. You give us something to think about there. And now on to Matt Bruns. Matt is an experienced DEMAS user. Matt is a member of the Connecticut Capital Region Emergency Planning Committee. He was the primary planner and proponent of DEMAS tools for a Connecticut state rollout of DEMAS tools in 2005. He spearheaded Connecticut state involvement in TOPOFF 3, and from that he came up with suggested improvements and a recommended path for the future of DEMAS. So we're very glad to have you here, Matt. Your question is, there have been a number of previous discussions on thick versus thin, i.e. web-based client. If individual features were migrated to thin client, which features could be migrated and which features need to be accessed if internet connectivity failed?
Hi, thanks for that. it's a pretty impressive bio there, too. I wonder who wrote it. That's very imaginative. But just for clarification, TOPOFF 3, I worked on this particular project, the DEMAS project, but I was not involved on the state-level program. But it worked very well. It's very educational.
Someone gave me that as your bio. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll be happy to send them the appropriate cash.
Okay.
That's a little boost. But, it was a very interesting project, and it did give us a lot of experience with the application in a wide variety of situations, so I'm glad I can participate today. The issue of thin client versus thick client is really a key issue, and as we go forward, This is obviously the primary decision that Sarah and her team have to make as to how to architect this thing. The essential features of Demis, I think we all have our favorites, but certainly communication aspects of it are the ones we probably use most, alerting, chat, messaging. Beyond that, there are things where you share information either through a journal or through GIS mapping or information about the event. The main thing, though, the main benefit of all this is the collaborative aspect of it, is the fact that you can dynamically share this data across the Internet with other users. The reason that Demis is a thick client currently, I think it's the primary reason, was, I think, a wise move originally, was to provide for redundancy in case of a loss of Internet connection. Even if you're using Demis and sharing it and then the lights go out, you can still have your data, you can still look at it, you can still even add to it. But the big problem is you cannot share it with anyone. So essentially, Demis changes from a communications collaboration system to a logbook. And that's valuable, but it isn't what we really are signing up for. There are a lot of complexities with a thick client, which was touched on earlier, particularly across a wide variety of sectors. Many, many users no longer have local administrator rights on their PCs. They literally can't install software. And you have to involve their IS department and get conflicts with other applications. And it does get complicated compared with I'm going to say thin client, but let me clarify that. The thin client's kind of tossed around. There's really two different classes of product here. A true thin client is something like Citrix or PC Anywhere or Remote Desktop, where you're basically having a picture of a screen of a computer someplace else delivered to your computer, and you're remotely controlling that other computer with your mouse and keyboard. But there's no data going across the Internet. There's no other information, just this picture being exchanged. That's technically a thin client and very useful and can be a real option. A browser-based application like HSIN or eTeam or LLIS, well, that's more of a database, but you get my idea. Those ones that are the only software they require is a web browser like Internet Explorer or Mozilla Firefox. It doesn't require any local software installation, generally speaking. That makes it much simpler to deploy in every situation. Most of the features currently in Demis can be delivered across a browser-based application. Certainly chat is done all the time, as anyone with teenage kids will tell you. The journal, live collaborative data, people use bulletin board systems and messaging and, of course, email. But all those things can be done through a browser-based application. Probably the most complicated part of that are the pieces that use or require data that the owner uses locally. The most obvious example is GIS data. Now, Rick Skinner is the big kahuna on this topic, but the big advantage of Demis is that if I had a GIS data set of some kind that showed my local community showing where my power lines are, I could generally import that into Demis and layer it with everything else I was getting. The implementation wasn't as good as it could have been, but it was an impressive feature. That's actually fairly hard to do on a browser-based GIS application, but it's still possible. You're also using local data that are graphics or spreadsheets or something else that you normally store locally. It's easier with a thick client to work with that than it is with a browser-based client. My recommendation would be, as we go forward, to look at a browser-based application. The HSIN system, I have a lot of complaints about that system. It's basically a commercial COT system that wasn't really configured right, but they also deployed a GIS application called ICAV within that. It's buried about 17 key clicks down inside of it. You'll never get to it unless you know where you're looking for it. But it's actually quite nicely done. So this can be done. But back to the reason why we have a thick client in the first place. The idea was data redundancy. I would propose that we look at this in a different way, and instead of having data redundancy, have connectivity redundancy. The idea being that if I'm using my Demis application on my web browser and I lose internet connectivity, is there another way for me to get to the servers at Demis or at DHS other than through the internet? And there is, and that's a telephone line. I would suggest that we look at, instead of having to be forced into a thick client for redundancy, use a browser-based application, but build another way to get to the data, a low bandwidth way that we can use with either dial-up telephones, cell phones, sat phones, ham radio links, that can be go. This is basically a model like the old America Online, where they give you a local toll-free number to call, and you dial that number with your computer modem, and that links you to the national system, bypassing the Internet, largely bypassing the Internet. Whether that'll work without the Internet is another question, but basically another way to get to the data rather than duplicating the data locally. That would be my suggestion. I think that's the core of my statement and my argument, and I hope we go forward with this. It's a very valuable tool. We had a lot of fun playing with it. The team that helped us deploy it, Bemis, was phenomenal, and I hope it goes forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Matt. Has Timothy Lowenstein joined us?
Abigine, this is Rick Skinner. I got an email from him earlier today. He said he had a doctor's appointment. He was going to try to finish up in time to get on the call.
Right. I know he told me that, too, but I haven't. I assume he has not made it. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll go ahead. I had given him a choice of three questions, and since he's not here, I might just throw out to everyone, in particular our speakers, how would you prioritize enhancements to the existing functionality? If you had to list them, what would be your top three? Any one of you guys, can you do that off the top of your head?
Repeat that question again.
How would you prioritize enhancements to existing functionality of Demis?
I would. This is John Stoddart. My main priority would be user friendliness. And the second would be one of the serious issues that is presented in Demis and most of the other products that are out there is I'm sitting in an EOC and all of a sudden I have 100 messages coming in. Right now I don't have any way of sorting those messages to get them to the appropriate people or send them to the forward them to the appropriate cogs. And those two issues, when we did the CWIG test last year in June, those were probably the two things that became obvious. Again, the user friendliness and the capability of being able to summarize information that comes through the alert messaging system and then being able to parse those out to the appropriate people or cogs.
Okay.
Yes, and that runs. I definitely concur, John. I had the same experience as Seawood, and it's very tricky. The idea of moving data from one cog to another in Demis is very flawed, I think. The idea of posting data doesn't really work terribly well. And what worries me is that you then lose control of your data forever. You've shared it with someone, and now you can't ever get it back again. And plus, the current structure is the journal entries in Demis, which is really most of the information is, that is not included in a posted message to another cog. So you can send them some stuff, but not really the most important stuff. I would recommend dropping that model and going to a situation where you could add other validated Demis members to your cog on a temporary basis and then remove their access later for the duration of the event. But
And the other thing would be the geo mapping, which I refer as a technical information exchange. Demis and only one other product has the capability of creating maps and sending those out through as part of the CAP alert. The problem is, and this is where you come to the use it or lose it. For a first-time user, I was not being a highly technical person. I was not able to create a map and send that out because one, I had to create layer. I would get my map from just like MapQuest or Yahoo Map or any of those, then I would have to put layers on top of that map, and then in order to put the layers, let's say if I had a spill and I wanted to send a map to the state police and to the health department saying, hey, this is a chemical spill, this is where it is, and this is the direction that the wind's blowing, and we need to evacuate this certain area. Well, in order to identify the area, I have to go in and plot each one of the points of the plume of the aerosol that's moving. But in order to do that, I have to first do my plots, and then I have to go to a separate software or find a separate software, and I have to convert all those plots to longitude and latitude. and then I have to bundle that together, and then I have to send it. I think the capability of geomapping is an extremely viable tool when we want to have interoperability. But right now it's so complex that it's very difficult to use and far from being user-friendly. I think, it's, as I mentioned, it's probably one of the most viable tools, but one of the most hardest to use.
Okay. Does anyone else of our speakers, do you have any comments you want to make on this particular question?
Yeah, this is Rick Skinner. I guess the way you phrased the question was how you would prioritize and not what would you prioritize. And I guess going back to the how thing, I would like to suggest that a group of serious practitioners get together and, you know, develop a list, sort of a punch list of the things that they consider important, and then have a group consensus, you know, weighting those items, and that would then be sort of a, you know, a group decision of what are the key issues.
Right. Okay. All right. Unless somebody has something else to say on this particular question, I'm going to open it up to let others comment on all of your comments on the other questions. Nothing else on that particular question about existing functionality? Okay, Sarah, would you like to comment or add anything to what these gentlemen have said?
Yes, I have several questions. I'll start with one for Walt, because this is something that's come up in several of the SIG calls I've participated in, and in regards to having DMIS be used every day, part of an everyday process. And I'm just curious if you've thought about what are some everyday processes that DMIS might lend itself to? Are there regular communications with other cogs that could somehow be better facilitated through DMIS? Or any way that DMIS could be, that a feature could be added to DMIS that would be useful every day, that would get people in there every day looking at it? Or anybody, if anybody's had some thoughts on this.
Am I off mute?
Oh, yeah, we didn't hear you.
Okay, I was talking away, but I wasn't getting anywhere. It's technical issues. I think what we had hoped to do is set up a number of local call cogs among the public safety agencies, public health agencies, hospitals, that we could use this then to do some of our daily communication back and forth with them. It is absolutely true, use it or lose it. We need to have something to offer these people. The virtual EOC, if you will, if we can get used to using this for part of our communication on a daily basis, leave it up and running on the desktop at all times, that we will have arrived and it'll work when we need it.
Can I ask you this? Do you think that the HazCollect implementation will actually push forward and encourage more daily, you know, viewing, like it would really, would be the incentive that would cause people to put it up on their desktop all day long and keep it going?
It's a step in that direction. I have developed beyond the quick start guide that John mentioned to make HazCollect, back when we had it live, that we could actually have used it if we needed to. I came up with my own version of just a two-page guide for specifically HazCollect, you know, quick. Don't have time to think or look at the manual. When the stuff hits the fan, you can't read a manual on how to do it. And that worked extremely well. I think we'll have at least a few of our local emergency managers that'll be ready to get into it as soon as it's available. We've been trying to promote this and sell it locally ever since a couple of years ago. But it is going to be a big step ahead. But we need to package some of the other things that to make it really spread nationwide like it needs to.
Does anyone else have a comment?
Sarah's questions?
Pardon?
Yes. Sarah, you know, yeah, we've been struggling with this daily use issue.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that occurs to my mind, and I'd be interested in getting some reaction from the group, our local office of our National Weather Service does a weekly weather briefing. And some states and maybe even FEMA, NOAA's got a site that kind of does a daily or weekly hazards briefing. I'm wondering if there isn't, you know, some kind of all hazards briefing, either on a daily or a weekly basis, might not be a useful feature to encourage folks to use it. In other words, the states are tracking special events, you know, football game, whatever. You know, terrorism-type concerns or security, weather, anytime you've gotten any kind of potential for, let's say, mudslides, because we have had some USGS participation in the past. So I'm just throwing that out as an idea for, because I could see where the tools that are existing could be between the alerts and, other ways of exchanging data, that this might not encourage some daily usage.
Well, it sounds to me like that's something that would be potentially of interest to kind of create within a state the communication that would tie in with and support the State Fusion Center and the governor's office and give them that kind of situational awareness capability that the NOC is providing for the Secretary of DHS, that you could set it up so that that information is going around and out to those COGs to facilitate that basic capability, which would tie in with the overall Homeland Security strategy.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking you would have if we use the vertical approach that Rick mentioned earlier, you would have national level situation, a briefing, such as what NOAA puts out there, maybe what FEMA, DHS puts out there. You may have regional, and then what I'm envisioning is your local user could be being delivered through his DMIS, and then has the capability to add, local, get the local weather service involved, and then any local events or local threats.
So do you have any further questions, Sarah?
Yeah, I have more questions. I've got one for Rick, I totally agree, and I like the idea of allowing people to categorizing the COGS in different ways, not maybe just limiting it to one way. But how do you think this information will be used? How do you envision that would work then, given how DMIS currently operates? If they've, if we sort it by key infrastructure, do you see this as a planning and preparation? It would facilitate people reaching out to these COGs to be able to plan and prepare for them, or in the event of an incident that they would reach out to them. I'm just wondering what the next step is there, how you see this would improve how the COGs are using DMIS.
Well, I think one way would be to force the user, the COG administrator, the person that's setting up the COG, to give some thought to how they plan to use that, how they plan to use DMIS, by thinking about who am I going to interface with, who do I need to interoperate with, and then I think when the list is categorized as an event is unfolding, the local EOC staff may know certain players, that they've practiced with, run exercises with, and so forth. But then there's the other sort of that diagonal layer of resources that might be necessary to be called in. some of the associations and agencies and regional organizations. So I think if they could see what's out there and perhaps be able to identify if that particular organization or entity, COG, is actually online and live, that might facilitate accessing that those other resources.
Maybe applying the same types of logic that are going into the resource messaging and EMAC thought processes would be good there.
Sure.
Comment?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, it's Art Botterell. One of the things I had down on my list here was the relationship between the, I think we can now refer to it as the legacy COG structure, and NIMS. We've had COGs for quite a long time, and they've sort of they're sort of an artifact. I wonder if it might not be time to at least adjust the nomenclature and maybe seize this as a teachable moment to bring things more into the NIMS framework.
Sarah, this is John. There is a structure already set up in NIMS. It's referred to as the Emergency Support Functions. And every organization, every county, every state, every sub-region, every city has already established their emergency support functions. And within it, there are 16 basic support functions. Within each of those, they have already identified all the people that are associated with that support function, such as communications, animal care, hazardous waste. So if you can structure the COGs around the ESFs, then when a municipality receives a COG, they can, and when we look at an EOC will already have a desk and a telephone and a computer for each of the ESFs already set up. They can forward that COG to that ESF, and then that ESF person, a representative, then has a listing of all the agencies and people that are involved in that type of emergency, and they can take care of the distribution. So there's, like you said, take care and incorporate NIMS with this, and NIMS already has that structure in place.
This is Amy. I'd like to ask Art a question on this issue.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Art, this question actually kind of goes to, and you're the expert on this, so that's why I wanted to pick your brain on it, the addressing for alerts within the framework of the distribution element, how that's being implemented across open. For example, let's say I wanted to send alerts to every COG, you know, in a certain geographical region. I have no capability to do that right now. Is that correct? Without picking out each one and putting them on a distribution list.
I am less expert in the EDXLDE than some others here, but I believe that is correct. I think that system can use any addressing space that's chosen, but I don't think it dictates an addressing space. I did want to demur from one comment I heard. I'm not sure that all local EOCs are organizing themselves along the lines of the federal ESFs, but I don't know that we need to dive into the details here. I think the point is that this may be the opportunity to revisit how we manage the address space and use it to reinforce the NIMS structure. And, yeah, I don't think there's any obstacle to that in terms of the EDXLDE. I think it's just a design choice that hasn't been made. Maybe Tom Merkel, are you still around? Can you confirm if I have that right?
I'm here, and, yes, that is correct, Art.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Sarah, you have another question?
Yes, I have more questions. I don't want to hog all the questions. I think a lot of people, we've got minds on this call with great comments and questions and suggestions. I guess I wanted to go back to John because he got the one-minute warning and wrapped up rather quickly. He was going to
talk about post-installation challenges, and he did, but was there anything else that he had that he wanted to mention there?
No, the only thing that I can mention is there's once it's up and running, there's instructions on how to install it, but there's not enough instructions on, once I get it up and running, how do I get operational? And in putting in alert messages, that's good for there's quick references for doing that. But then when it comes to if a user wants to develop a map, then I haven't seen any quick references on how to do that. And also being able to identify if you want to put in a plume or something, how do you do that? So there's no documentation that I found when I used the system there to help in that area. So if that would be a great help if the documentation post-inflation can be improved.
This is Amy. I just wanted to comment to John that I did do an article about how to get an Aloha plume into Demis, but it is somewhat cumbersome. So, that's one of those areas I would suggest might be considered on the possible enhancements list. I'll agree with you on that. I'd also like to comment on Rick's idea on the question that about how priorities for existing functionality. And Rick, I'm really glad you brought up that idea of what should the process be used to determine that. And I wondered if you thought, some kind of maybe not governing body, but at least an advisory group would be a useful way to go on that.
Well, yeah, I think if that would be a benefit to Sarah, I think those of us out in the practitioner world, with some guidance from Sarah, maybe put together a group or a way of trying to identify what are the priorities so that we have, if we have 20 priorities, we may only have enough money to do 10 of them, but they may not be the first 10 in the list. And
yeah, that's exactly right. And I just want to point out, as far as I know, we've never had that kind of structure or in the past.
This is Art. May I insert something real quick?
Sure.
I think we're hearing a lot of feedback around the general theme of usability, and I would add my voice to that. I think that the human computer interface design of the Demis screens could use significant work. I think there may be a temptation to try to paper over those usability problems with documentation, and that sometimes that may be the choice that has to be made. But I think that to some extent they're kind of the same problem, and some real usability work would be very helpful, I think, to the uptake of the program generally.
Now, this is Rick again. I think it would be helpful, too, to collect a library of M-cells and after-action reports and so forth where Demis was integral to the event so that we can see who's doing what, how they're doing it, kind of learn from what's out there. But as far as I've seen, there aren't any resources like an LLIS.gov repository for that kind of stuff.
Other questions?
Or
go ahead, I'm sorry.
I just said it was a great idea.
Well, I wonder too, Sarah, if we could possibly mention that we are in the process of finally getting a new website.
Yes, we are, in fact, I think we've made quite a bit of progress on that. It may be a little bit premature to say when it's going to be out there, but in the not-too-distant future, we have an updated website that we'll be putting out. Now, that doesn't have the updated
updated documentation or some of the other resources people are looking for. Not to say it might not, because we've been going through the documentation to try to find additional information that might be useful. I also wanted to see, there have been a number of great suggestions and comments from this conversation. And as part of the assessment we're going to do, we'll be reaching out and doing interviews, focus groups, the suggestions to gather people together, the serious practitioners, and get your comments and feedbacks, definitely. And Art, I've been hearing that theme also. It's usability and user friendliness. So a part of whatever we do will, moving forward with the new version, will be testing it, getting a prototype out there for you guys to try your hands at, and make sure we get the interface right before it goes out. And Colleen was waving her hand over here.
I have a question, actually, for Matt Bruins. I mean, we've heard a lot about the difficulty of the mapping, and you, in your presentation, mentioned some use of ICAV. How is ICAV's ability to support the kind of mapping requirements that DEMIS users in the state and local governments, you know, have? Because you also talked about the difficulty of integrating, you know, the data, the map sets and GIS that states have in a thin client or browser-based application.
Right, Colin. The ICAV uses basically a straight ESRI module. It's basically built on the ArcGIS, ArcIMS server type model. And with that, you can bring in other GIS resources that are published either by WMS or otherwise on a public URL, or even, I guess, secure URL. So if you can pre-publish your own material on a state-level server, for example, which a lot of states do now, it can be brought in that way into your local view of ICAV. If you have it on your C drive, you don't have a way to upload it, although that's certainly a problem that could be solved, too. Is that what you're getting at on that question? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of, the basic functions that the mapping provides for users, like they were talking about, the difficulty of getting a plume generated. And I know there's, was it like cats or something out there that does stuff that looked like it was pretty simple, you know, drag and drop and estimation. But, I mean, it didn't seem to me when I saw a demo of that that you had to plot in all these lat-long stuff. But, I mean, how does it support that kind of need?
Well, the example of plume monitoring, I think, is actually an unfortunate one. I have a lot of skepticism about the usefulness of that idea unless you're running off live data.
So many plumes.
Well, yeah, unless you're running off of live sensors in the field and of a live picture, I can see you can cause more harm than good with a plume map that's no longer accurate, but that's a personal foible of mine. But other areas, flooded areas or damaged areas or any polygon you wanted to display, your choices are basically to manually draw it, which is by no means impossible, or to import it from another GIS-based resource, and certainly Rick Skinner knows more about this than I do. But as far as I can tell, most of those things can be done via a browser-based GIS tool as well as a locally-based one at this point.
This is Art. May I generalize this question just a bit?
Please do.
I think this goes to a word that we haven't really used a lot in this conversation, which is interoperability. And I know that in previous years, the DEMIS program ran into a bit of friction because it was perceived as building a new and government-funded stovepipe that was basically competing with commercial products. One of the things I would very much like to see DEMIS do is move toward using its own open interface to provide a standards-based interface between the client, and this may be an argument for a slightly thicker client, and the service, so that other products can also integrate and cooperate and kind of get out of the JMS stovepipe that we sort of inherited from from Demas's military predecessor, I guess.
This is Tom Merkel. I'd just like to chime in on that as well, Art. If we go by that approach, too, that will also bring Demas more in line with an SOA-type architecture, which I believe at some point in time should be considered anyway.
Absolutely.
This is Amy. I'd just like to make a comment on your question, David Jean, about the website, and it relates to John Sodert's issue about quick start materials.
Right.
One of the reasons I would like to see the new website, you know, just the existing new website, slightly updated, out there as soon as possible, is there are some flash training materials that have never been seen the light of day yet, and that are quite useful and are provide that kind of quick start. In other words, here's you know, 20 lessons of PowerPoints versus here, sit and watch this. And I think it will be a very valuable resource if we can just find it and get it out there.
Okay.
Rick Skinner, on the whole issue of improving, you know, getting the ideas together, putting libraries together and so forth, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be appropriate to establish a collaboration portal and basically invite all of the Demas Cog subscribers, or at least put a notice out to them that it's available, and then use that as a central point of collaboration for ideas, feedback, AARs, MCELs, you know, training materials, and so forth. Just put it all in one location. But allow the interactive interactivity with the users so they can comment and you know, post other ideas and edits and so forth.
Thank you, Rick. Any other comments?
It's Matt Burns. One last thing I'd offer to Sarah and Colleen, especially, that whatever happens in the next generation of Demas, I think it will have to have a much more visible presence in the overall DHS architecture in FEMA. I was always astonished how you could search the DHS website and not find a mention of Demas. And that really inhibited the deployment of it. People had never heard about it, so it was very hard to get credibility. So I hope you can get more visibility within your agency on this.
You know, I think as my day job as FEMA's web program manager, I may be able to do something about that. At least
isn't
on the web.
That's great news, actually. Good to hear. Great.
I think this is Art. I think part of the issue may be a perception of some competition between Demas and HSIN. And I think it might be, as part of that message, it may be helpful to try to do a little positioning to alleviate some of the anxieties about that to the extent that's possible.
Yes, thank you. That's a good suggestion.
Okay, Sarah, you have a final closing comment?
I didn't, but I think this has been a fantastic discussion, and I hope everyone on the call, not just those who we invited to answer these questions, but if you have any thoughts or comments, recommendations, your own priority list, please send them to me or Ava Jean. You know, we're going to be looking into all of these suggestions, and we're trying to lean forward here and go ahead and move forward with doing some things, even though we don't have necessarily the assessment support or that in place. I think there's some suggestions we can even take from today and start looking into and working on them. So I just appreciate, as always, everyone's involvement and giving us your lunch hour or this hour to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And as we move ahead with our monthly meetings.
Time to wrap. I'm just going to ask, do you think it'd be helpful to take the questions from today and put them out on our list and see if we can get any response that way?
That sounds like the beginning of a collaboration portal.
Okay. I will do that.
Okay, we can do that. And if you folks like this type of discussion, I think it's very beneficial. We could certainly do more of this in the future if you like. Okay, good deal. As we move ahead with our monthly meetings, we request that you share your ideas for topics. It's very important that we hear from you. And I'm going to turn this back over to Tom, and we will have a recording up later today. Tom?
Thank you, Evergreen. Once again, thank you, everyone, for participating. This was a most excellent discussion. Just so you know, we'll be meeting again on Wednesday, May 7th at 12 noon Eastern Time. And thank you once again.
Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.